Okay, first off, I think I made up a word on last week's podcast. Sometimes when I start talking, you know, I screw things up. Anyway, I said unpredictable instead of unpredictable. Sorry about that, but if you like the word unpredictable, feel free to use it. So yeah, I took a random little trip to Los Angeles a couple days ago. It was kind of a weird trip, but I mean, I had fun with a couple friends, and I always love visiting my best friend, Los Angeles. I love you. Speaking of loving Los Angeles, Frank Sinatra's kind of terrible Quincy Jones-produced song called L.A. Is My Lady. It's kind of a loving L.A. song. It's on his last solo album, which was also entitled L.A. Is My Lady. Kind of a corny song, but some of the chorus is like, L.A. is my lady, she knows how to soothe me. So I'm on board with that, Mr. Sinatra. L.A. does care for me, too, but Sunnyvale, on the other hand, wants me dead. And on the way to L.A., I drove down there and I was listening to whatever, some songs. And Julian Lennon's Valotte, V-A-L-O-T-T-E, from 1984. He's the son of John Lennon. That song came up. God, I haven't heard that in so many years. My God. Pretty great song and just a fantastic opening. Here's a small taste. Sitting on the doorstep of the house I can't afford, I can feel you there. Anyway, in L.A., me and my buddy Buckley went to this old school Italian place on Ocean Park, kind of near Santa Monica. It's so 70s, 80s feeling, kind of older crowd, stiff drinks. The martinis are in big normal glasses, like big fucking martini glasses, not like those teeny ones you get at like fancy restaurants these days. And it was funny. There was like, when we got there, there was this like weird racket going on about like a bunch of members of the staff were kind of gesticulating around the dessert cart. So anyway, there was this whole drama, and like the bartender came over and the whole staff was there and they were like, you know, talking about the dessert or something. Obviously something was off. And so one guy really quickly like took one of the desserts off and then came back and put another one. And just because of like the 70s, 80s vibe, this little incident, I was joking with Buckley. I'm like, that could have inspired like a Peter Falk Columbo episode. Who's buried at Pierce Brothers Memorial? But anyway, I kind of pictured Columbo walking into the restaurant and like closing the door. And he's like, okay, nobody leaves. I'm going to turn this place upside down until I find who stole the upside down cake. Insert laughter, hopefully. Anyway, let's get to this episode. More Los Angeles, some Nirvana, and of course my specialty, prime rib. No, I'm kidding. I mean my specialty, random shit.
You are my density. You are my density.
So yeah, anyway, the waiter was great. The steak was great. And when I'm drunkish, I make the accident of kind of asking, you know, people like bartenders or waiters are like, how old do you think I am? Because these days, some people say my age or even older. I mean, I know time catches up to us all, but I still feel young, aside from the fact that I'm, you know, losing my hair a bit, of course. And really quickly, I met a friend actually in L.A. last weekend, too. I haven't seen him for like 5 years. He's a personal trainer. We met for coffee and we're talking and he's like, hey, mate, you should use some minoxidil for your hair. You need it. And I was like, OK, yeah, I'm losing a little bit of hair, but we haven't seen each other for 5+ years. And that's what you tell me? That's what you got? But anyway, back to dinner with Buckley. We were like pretty high-ish during dinner and I came up with a couple of fun phrases. Buckley forgot what fish that the waiter had kind of said. There was a couple specialties. And so when we were deciding, you know, he was like, what was the first fish? What was the second? And I kind of leaned over to Buckley and kind of said to him in like a very Goodfellas type way, I was like, I'll get him to repeat the fishes. And then we just started laughing right away. We're like, repeat the fishes? What the fuck is that? It would be a great autobiography title. And if someone does use that, you have to pay me. And the other phrase that I said was split the wedge. We were just talking about steakhouses in general. It's like, God, you got to always get a wedge and just split it, meaning split the wedge salad in two, because those things are fucking humongous. And just a wedge salads and a steak and a martini. It's like the holy trinity to me. But yeah, split the wedge has kind of a vaguely gamblerish sound, kind of like split the eights or whatever when you're playing cards. And split the wedge actually would have made a great title for an old movie. There's not an old movie called Split the Wedge Well, okay, let's make up one. 1979's Alan J. Pakula's Split the Wedge stars Burt Reynolds and Jenna Rollins as two chefs whose restaurants are next to each other. They fall in love. It's still goofy, but somehow it works. Okay, fake film description done. And another great phrase is on the take. It's like, he's corrupt. He's a grifter. He's a sleaze. God damn it, now that I mentioned grifter, I have to mention 1990's The Grifters. Okay, this is a great movie, guys. Directed by Stephen Frears with John Cusack, a young Annette Bening, and Angelica Houston. It's like a film noir about small-time con artists, a mom, her son, and her son's girlfriend. It's all about deceit and conning people. It's well shot, has a whopper of an ending, kind of a tragedy. And I guess the word grifter appears to be based on the older term grafter, which meant con man or thief. But yeah, I like grifter much better. Grafter sounds like a, I don't know, plastic surgeon or a steel worker. And mentioning the Grifters, the band, kind of an under the radar band, but great group from Memphis, kind of early 90s and so on. I think they still kind of play sometimes. They were pretty tight with Guided by Voices. But I saw the Grifters play in Silver Lake way back, and they were just, they seemed like cool, like real dudes. They put on a great show, too. They have several albums. Please check out some of their stuff. One of my personal favorites is the song Rats on their third album, Crappin' You Negative, which kind of has this devil figure clasping his face in regret with like flames in the background. Rats is a great one. And stick with it because the ending gets really, really good. But they have a bunch of other songs too. Okay, let's try and find a topic here. Okay, yeah, since we were just talking about bands, let's mention it's kind of a pretty obscure little band. Most of you haven't heard about them probably. They're called Nirvana. Yeah, jokes aside, I just read Kurt Cobain killed himself 30 years ago. I mean, I was young at the time, but that walloped me, and I can't believe it's goddamn 30 years since that happened. I just remember being glued to the MTV news program with Kurt Loder, like, wow. That was kind of like my first big death of a someone I liked or a celebrity. Like when I was a kid, that was my whatever, my James Dean or something. I was huge on them. God, I remember buying the cassette at Bayshore Mall in Hayward with my grandmother. Yes, the lovely departed grandmother who I had buy me the Madonna sex book, actually at the same Bayshore Mall. Forgive me, Mimi. That's what we called her. And she worked at the iconic See's Candies. Wow, See's fucking candies. I mean, she would bring us home stuff, and I would just be like, oh, yes. There was this one chocolate sprinkled one that I loved that was in the variety box. And speaking of my grandma, I remember I found, I was probably 16, I don't know, I found like an Anne Murray CD sitting around, and I just like popped it on. I was like, okay, I was always kind of curious, you know, things back when I was young. And I played it, a little bit of it. And I was like, wow, that's, I mean, not my style of music necessarily, but God, that's catchy as shit. The songs are corny as hell, but they just click with me even still. I really love You Needed Me. Here's a little bit of You Needed Me. I cried the tear, you wiped it dry. I was confused, you cleared my mind. I sold my soul, you brought it back for me and held me up and gave me dignity. Somehow you needed me. Isn't that nice? And there's another one, 1978's I Just Fall in Love Again, which was actually in the end credits of the Burt Reynolds 1979 Starting Over movie directed by, holy shit, Alan J. Pakula, this time a real movie he directed. It's an okay movie. It's kind of a downer. I don't really like the ending. There's some funny scenes of the really classic one with Candace Bergen singing in it. But anyway, here's a little bit of that chorus. And oh, I just fall in love again. Just one touch and then it happens every time. And there I go, I just fall in love again when I do. I can't help myself, I fall in love with you. And hopefully I'll fall in love with someone at some point. Anyway, to wrap that up, I miss you, Mimi. You were awesome. And speaking of smells like teen spirit, which weirdly enough, there was a teen spirit deodorant back in the day, and deodorants have a smell or prevent you from smelling, therefore smells like teen spirit. Supposedly Kurt Cobain had never heard of the deodorant, and I figure I believe him. What the hell? But yeah, man, like Nirvana was my Beatles. I mean, I hadn't really gotten my musical taste down, but I just kind of lucked out and I took a chance buying the album. Now these days, I know you can stream everything and, you know, it's like just back then you had to actually buy the fucking thing. And, you know, you would take gambles with music. Sometimes I would just pick up a cassette or a CD from some band I've never heard of or only heard written about. Because, you know, all the music wasn't available to you at your fucking fingertips. I mean, yeah, and sometimes I would pick up cassettes or CDs from bands I'd never heard of. And yeah, sometimes the music would be garbage. But sometimes I would just hit the jackpot and be like, oh, wow, I'm going to be listening to this damn thing for the rest of my life. And it's funny, speaking of Smells Like Teen Spirit, I went to college with a guy whose legs were in the Samuel Baird-directed video for Smells Like Teen Spirits. He was like on the bleachers at the beginning when the song starts. I guess there some people were at like a Nirvana show in Los Angeles, and they were like, hey, we're going to do a video for the song if you guys want to show up, you know, for this. So that's pretty damn cool. But yeah, I was kind of obsessed with Nirvana and Kurt Cobain. I saw them play probably three or four times. I remember one time Kurt Cobain was kind of feuding with Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. And at this show, Pearl Jam was actually opening for Nirvana. And I just remember Kurt Cobain throwing away some kind of little dig, like a subtle dig at Pearl Jam. And God, I remember when I bought In Utero, the album, at midnight. They used to do that sometimes. They would like open the store again for special releases. So I drove up Sunset Boulevard and went to Tower Records, which is no longer there, but it's across the street from the great bookstore, Book Soup, which is still there. I just went there a couple days ago with Buckley. Book Soup is a must go to anytime you're in LA. And believe it or not, no, not believe it or not, the theme song from The Greatest American Hero. But yeah, believe it or not. No, not Ripley's, believe it or not. Okay, I really have to stop this, I swear. Anyway, last time, believe it or not, I saw Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love driving on Sunset Boulevard once. He was slumped in the passenger seat of his legendary Volvo, and Courtney Love was just driving. I remember they slowly drove past me. I was on the other side of the road, you know, so they kind of went right in front of me. And I was just like, oh my God, wowza. It was like the equivalent for me at the time of seeing Jesus drive by me. Not specifically in a Volvo, but or just seeing, you know, like Elvis in person, driving his minivan, seeing Stalin in the clouds and shit. But it was epic. Again, he just drove by me, but it was just like, shit, I'll never forget that. And yeah, obviously so many great songs. And Kurt Cobain's death was just one of those transformational deaths for me. There are moments in your life, like when certain deaths happen, it just kind of changes your perspective. Like, you know, Cobain's death, River Phoenix's death also tweaked me, along with, of course, Elliott Smith, who I just adored. And goddamn, I wish he had stuck it out. I'm miserable at times, you know, oftentimes alone, sometimes high. And sometimes when I'm feeling crappy or low or just wanting to give up or something, I just kind of picture George C. Scott standing there and saying to me, fucking deal with it, man, and keep going. And there's another great quote from Teddy Roosevelt. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done that better. The credit belongs to the man actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust, sweat, and blood, who strives valiantly. Yes, a bit dramatic, but how awesome is that? And it's kind of fun. My Wi-Fi network has always been River Phoenix, the word, you know, just one word. And every time I see it, it kind of makes me smile, think about him. Please see Dogfight or Running on Empty, two just great movies. Dogfight tears me apart, man. It's so good. And speaking of just in general, the human condition, the playwright and just ultimate grandmaster of grizzle, Samuel Beckett, look at his face. It's so amazingly just lined and lived and whatever. He had a great quote, "You're on Earth. There's no cure for that." But yeah, people with some depression or mental illness, they often try to dull or just completely escape by using drugs or alcohol. A lot of the times these people, they didn't start drugs to, like, you know, party like Guns N' Roses in a dumb shit way. But they, you know, took the drugs to mask something else, like the inner pain or loneliness or whatever. But yeah, a lot of times the most sensitive people are also the most talented, and you just hope they would get through it. But yeah, I miss all those guys, River Phoenix, Kurt Cobain. But yeah, for some reason, Elliott Smith's death hit me the hardest. I was oldest at the time of his death. And, you know, I was just a complete young dumbass when Kurt Cobain died. I mean, he died, but there, you know, I was just like, oh, man. But by the time Elliott Smith died, I had lived a bit more, you know, had some successes, had some failures, realized life was, you know, pretty difficult at times. And so I just kind of connected with him. When he, you know, committed suicide, I was like, shit, man. It's because, yeah, I just wish he had kept going. And there's kind of a great song about River Phoenix by the kind of awesome New York City band Versus. They've broke up, got back together and broke up and blah, blah, blah. Kind of a 90s band fronted by the Baliut brothers along with Fontaine Toops. This woman who's just got a great voice, and these names are amazing. Fontaine Toops. But yeah, give River a listen. It's on 1994's The Stars Are Insane album. It's got kind of a little tragic line in it. Last time I saw River, he was lying face down. He fell down face down. And I guess maybe Versus was at the Viper Room that night River Phoenix died. But anyway, I saw Versus many times. They also just put on a great show. They seem cool. They have a lot of catchy as fuck songs. And just for a little taste of Versus with Fontaine Toops singing lead, check out Raining from 1999's EP Afterglow. But yeah, River Phoenix was kind of like a modern version of James Dean. Not quite the over-the-topness of Dean, but a similar, like, absolute vulnerability and emotion. They were just like, you know, exposed nerves, man. And as James Dean said it memorably in Rebel Without a Cause, "You're tearing me apart," which was also taken by that Tommy Wiseau or whatever for this terrible movie, The Room, which also has the amazing line, "Oh, hi, Mark." So I do love that. But anyway, I was kind of high the other day, in parentheses, meaning now. No, I'm not. And I was walking around and I went into a grocery store and got another one of those grocery store music magic moments. I was, you know, walking around. And I just heard something kind of in the distance. I'm like, oh, my God, what is that? And I had to look it up. I knew the song. It's like, God, who's singing that? Journey or some shit, but it was Night Rangers, When You Close Your Eyes, from, get this, people, 1983, with just a chorus that can blow your ass off. It's pure 80s amazingness, if that's a word. But yeah, when I got home, I almost felt higher from listening to the music, and I just played it like nonstop. I was just like, you know, fake guitar strumming in my living room, dancing. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was like I was doing an arena concert. But anyway, it's just got a great chorus. I mean, the chorus is like better than Adderall. We've all got those songs that kind of get us through shit, like the songs that make us feel like, okay, you know, fuck yeah, this is going to work. Okay, let's keep going. And anyway, here's a little bit of that chorus. When you close your eyes, do you dream about me? When you close your eyes, do you dream about me? When you close your eyes, do you dream about me? When you close your eyes, do you dream about me? And hey, feel free to dream about me. Back on Cobain, I was one of the slime that bought a copy of his written suicide note. That was like my Dead Sea Scrolls, looking for clues or secrets. And I did go and see the house in Seattle where he killed himself. Jesus, what a great, totally amazing neighborhood. It's the house that Grunge built. But there's a little park next to it, and at the time you could see the guest house where he'd killed himself. And God, man, I'll never forget that picture of his somewhat stiff arm kind of from across the way next to the cigar box after he killed himself. It was like mind-blowing, almost like a Zapruder film of my time. That reference doesn't really work, but it's always fun to say Zapruder, I swear. Hey, try it. Say it. See? Look at you. You're smiling. Can I come in? Oh, wait a minute. And actually, Kurt Cobain was at this rehab clinic called Exodus Recovery right before he died. It's on Lincoln Boulevard, I believe. But then he split and he went to Seattle. And then a few days after that, just kind of, you know, got back on the drugs and killed himself. It's funny. One of my friends works at an Exodus hospital in San Diego. And speaking of Exodus, which was a cool movie with Paul Newman, but actually I'll never forget the book Exodus by Leon Uris, because it was a massive book. And I just remember it in my mom's bookcase when I was like, you know, whatever, 6 or 7. And it was just like so big and just like kind of daunting looking. But I will spare you me singing any Nirvana songs. You guys, you know, Nirvana's massive. So I'm sure you've heard all their stuff. But anyway, rest in peace, Kurt. Your time here was short, but your impact was seismic. And success can be a tricky thing. I mean, we all want to be successful, sure, but we to what level and at what cost? You know, Kurt Cobain was a lonely kid who said to himself, I'm going to get out of this shit-ass town and become a fucking huge rock star. And wow, did he ever. But in the end, being a rock star probably wasn't that great. And once you're famous, you know, you can't like undo it. And I'm not saying fame caused Cobain's death or River Phoenix's or whatever, but it sure as hell doesn't help. But yeah, I think, you know, like a little success can be a good thing. It's just when it gets out of control, then it's like, yikes. And while we're on the subject of James Cameron, just kidding. But hey, now that you mentioned him, I have a possibly stupid but intensely held absolute refusal to watch Titanic or especially the Avatar movies. I tried to watch Titanic maybe at one point, and then I thought of James Cameron saying, I'm the king of the world, and be like, fuck you, I'm not watching it. He seems like a total dick. Plus, it's more of like a girl's movie. What do I give a shit about Leonardo DiCaprio back then? Now that he's starting to look like crap, I'm more interested in him. And as far as Avatar, I mean, the animation just looked too much like a video game or something. It's like these actors are portraying these things. It's all computer-generated, And Avatar is where we're headed, some alternate universe where everything is computer generated and we're just plugged into one large electric socket. Sorry for that tangent. But anyway, briefly back to some addiction and tortured artists and whatnot. There's a new book on the fantastic singer Billie Holiday. It's called Bitter Crop, The Heartache and Triumph of Billie Holiday's Last Year by Paul Alexander. What an absolute stunner of a title with that combo of heartache and triumph. It's like life personified. She was addicted to drugs, but she was tough as nails and no one to mess with. One great quote of hers is, no matter what the motherfuckers do to you, never let them see you cry. Just badass. The book has a great passage in it. When she was singing, she could keep at bay the soul-crushing loneliness she often felt. I mean, wow, what a sentence. And she was pretty ravaged by the end, her voice slightly failing, but she just kept going on her own terms and a complete just badass of a woman. Rest in peace, Billie Holiday. And I think I may have mentioned this before. Sometimes my memory betrays me. Memory, how dare you betray me? But yeah, the song I'll Be Seeing You is just completely mind-blowing, touching, just nails it in all categories with just the heartbreaking, great ending from it. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. I mean, come on, how good is that? Please be impressed. Anyway, I hope you had a nice time on this episode. Can we meet again? Maybe every Tuesday morning? I will show up. I mean, not in like in a weird way. I mean, unless that's the way you want me to be. But yeah, I do know this podcast can be random at times and weird and personal, but I do hope some people enjoy it. And life can be rough for all of us. And this podcast kind of keeps me motivated, and just having a project is great. So yeah, I mean, not every episode will be a hit or too good, but occasionally there might be something good in here. I don't know. I mean, there's a 50-50 shot you may like it. And speaking of 50-50, there's a new book on the amazing New York paper, no longer in print, The Village Voice. Good Lord, I think maybe it's online, but it's just a shadow of itself. But the book is called The Freaks Came Out to Write the Definitive History of The Village Voice, the radical paper that changed American culture. Wow, what a mouthful. That's what she said, sorry. By the author Tricia Romano. And I read a great quote from someone that worked on the paper. Everyone in the newsroom would agree that 50% of The Voice was excellent and 50% was awful. The problem was there was no consensus on which 50% was which. Consensus is a hard word to say, goddammit. And let's just close with a great quote from George Carlin, the comedian. Think of how stupid the average person is and realize half of them are stupider than that.